south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. All right, so the other day, I'm walking along a big city in Latin America, a pretty big city, and I got injured. Or I should say, more specifically, my shoes and pants got injured, pretty much destroyed. So how'd that happen, and could it happen to you walking along, minding your own business here in Latin America? Well, here's my latest boots on the ground story. I'm in a university district, so it's all campus, but a lot of big roads going to and from it. Right in front of this university, there's a six-lane highway. That's where all the action is. Just hundreds of people walking by all the time. People dressed really smart, suit and ties, guys in lab coats, nurses, engineering types, and children of the rich with real jewelry, not a hair out of place, designer clothes, iPhone 10s, I think they're up to that now, right? And on this strip where they've got all kinds of restaurants, food stores, McDonald's even, they've got a municipal police station, a very big one. So you've got lots of cop cars going in and out. There's a parking lot in there with lots of broken down police vehicles. That's usual in Latin America. I'd say half the cop cruisers are pretty shot. They look like they came from a scratch and dent sale. And the other half just don't work at all. Missing parts, no batteries, alternators, spare tires, you name it. Yep, especially when it comes to government property, things go missing. Because, you see, somehow in Latin America, the phrase to serve and protect means serve yourself first. By helping yourself to whatever you can get and protect and hide it from the next guy, because he'll steal it if you don't. But I digress, that's another story. Anyway, right on the main strip in front of this campus, they've got a very big cop shop. With tons of fat-ass cops, some of them grossly overweight, sitting around or standing around talking to each other and not doing dick. That's normal. So anyway, yesterday I was walking by and I noticed there was lots of construction going on the front of the building. They were doing some repairs on the facade of the cop shop. All of a sudden I felt this burning on my neck and I looked up and a shower of sparks was hailing down. With a pea-sized glowing chunk of metal landing on my shoe and smoking a hole through it. Yep, I had the proverbial hot foot. Then came a second round of sparks and shrapnel that put pinholes in my pants. Because, you see, there was a guy two stories up welding something onto the side of the building, and the sparks were flying on all the people that happened to be walking along on that sidewalk below. As for me, I was dressed kind of gringo cash. My clothes weren't expensive or anything, but there were people walking by in three-piece suits. They were getting nailed, too. Now, this guy was only welding in spurts, so I guess the showers of sparks only came down every 10 or 20 minutes. But do you think the groups of cops who were sitting there just yakking away with each other would say anything? No. In fact, when I got burned, I quickly walked out of range up to a couple of cops who were standing in their gabbing. I gave them a what the f*** look, and one of them shrugged and gave me a look back as if to say, sorry about that, bud, but you live life at your own risk. And you know, normally I totally agree with that sentiment. That's one thing I really like about Latin America. No nanny state, no big brother, you're responsible for yourself. Though you'd think they'd give you some kind of advance warning, a sign, a barricade, something. So gringos and expats, do beware. When you're walking around, you're going to see welders, solderers, and people busting concrete by hand with huge sledgehammers. And that means on occasion there's dust and dirt and junk flying everywhere and landing on everything, including you. And they're not wearing any safety or protection equipment at all, so why should they care about you? Believe me, that's not the first time I walked through an unexpected shower of welding sparks. The thing is, I can weld a bit myself. I used to work on my own cars. I have my own welder, and though my welding joints aren't very pretty, they work. But I take precautions and use protection. And you've seen welders too, hopefully from a distance, and you know it's a dangerous profession. You see the sparks flying everywhere, but the guys are properly outfitted for safety. Up where you come from anyway, but down here, you see, it's done typically without a mask or gloves, and there'll be hot sparks flying everywhere. Oh, and just one question for you social justice warriors. Where are all the women welders? I've never met one in my whole life. Oh, and on that note, I never met a lady plumber or a rotor rooter either. And those are jobs that pay 50 to 100 bucks an hour. I know, it's murder on the nails, the jellish. But ladies, please, 50 to 100 bucks an hour? But I digress. Man, did I digress. Anyway, so what about safety equipment? Well, it's not like it isn't provided. Sure, welding companies and construction outfits do supply all that stuff, but most welders just say, screw it. It's too hot to wear all that gear, and they're used to it. That's the norm, and they suffer in silence for it. But man, it takes its toll, especially when you see the scars on their hands and arms and the inevitable damage it does to their eyes. You'd think they'd be using helmets, goggles, and eye shields, but only about half of them do. You've seen welders, right? When you weld, the light's so bright, if you look at it for any extended period of time, it permanently damages your retina. I asked one guy welding at a body shop one day, how can you stand looking at that thing? It's painful. And he says, oh, I don't look directly at it. Only when I first start the spark, then I look away and catch it out of the corner of my eyes. I got a method, you know, got it down. I don't know about that. You can't look at that thing for 2 seconds without little glowing spots appearing in your vision long after you've looked away. Anybody, whether he's a welder or not, will tell you that. A hot welding bead can be brighter than the sun. Why do you think people use welding goggles to look at eclipses? Have you heard of welder's tan? Well, that's what you get on your face and arms if they're not protected and you're a welder. Up close, the light's so bright and intense, you get a tan. But you knew that already, right? Or did you? We've all heard that probably the most dangerous common professions are number one, farming, and number two, construction work. That's why there are all kinds of safety devices and clothes you're supposed to wear when you're doing that kind of work. In construction, you got the hard hats, goggles, the leather gloves, masks of various types, steel-toed boots, all kinds of stuff. All of it's available down here in Latin America, too. All you got to do is walk into a hardware store. There are racks and racks of that crap, but almost no one uses it. Or at best, that stuff's only used very selectively. I've always thought it's kind of funny when you go to a big construction site and you see a guy with a hard hat. It's usually the architect or the general contractor, the guy that almost never uses a power tool or swings a hammer. But he's the guy with a college degree and he knows better. Or maybe it's just for the photo op, because when you see ads on TV for construction companies and such, they always show well-dressed guys in squeaky clean hard hats. But when you visit the job site, almost no one's wearing one. So you have to ask yourself, if all that safety stuff is available, why aren't people using it? They'll tell you it's a nuisance, a hindrance, and makes their job a little harder. And that's why there are so many injuries on a construction job. And you'd think things would be different if you could find somebody to sue. And even so, the Latin culture is not litigious. So even when grunts and construction workers get hurt, they rarely sue. And you know, throughout Latin America, there's national health care plans, so people always get treated at the hospital, even though they're C-grade hospitals with often medieval treatment. Now get this into your head, no matter what you've heard about national health care systems in Latin America, they all pretty much suck. I know, International Living and some of those other rags will tell you Ecuador, Colombia, and Costa Rica have pretty good national health care systems, and gringos ought to check them out. They're free for the locals and for gringos and expats beyond dirt cheap. Well, I'll lay it on you once again. You must get private health care insurance. And by all means, skip the public national health care hospitals unless you happen to get in a car accident right outside the emergency room. Note that 80 to 90% of your average working grunts could never afford private health care, so they're always on the national health care system and don't know any different. They're used to long lines, dirty corridors and rooms, and a shortage of everything, and being stuck in a waiting room for up to 4 hours at a time. Now, every once in a while, a new political party will come in and promise to clean up the national health care system, and they will for a year or so. I've seen it, for example, in Ecuador. They've brought the system almost up to first world snuff. For 2 or 3 years, it was going great guns. However, these days, in 2019, it's taken 2 steps backward and is now in bankruptcy. Though isn't it strange, the top 10% of Latin Americans who have dough never use that system. They always buy private insurance. It's kind of along the same lines as fat-assed high-end politicians in the States. They've got their own private insurance plans and don't use the healthcare plans they've created for the common worker. Like George Carlin once said, politicians have their own private club and you ain't in it. Anyway, the good and the bad about Latin America not being a litigious society is that almost no one gets sued, even when someone gets hurt on the job, which happens all the time. And though you may have heard, there's been a big push for workers' rights here in Latin America, and in many cases, workers have the upper hand. especially unionized workers. And where do you find unions? In minimum wage factory jobs, people working at Maquila's, and where else? Government jobs. Teachers, street departments, road maintenance, cops, firefighters, mid and low level paper pushing bureaucratic slugs. Yep, they're all in unions, and just recently they've had heavy laws passed protecting them. However, in Latin America, they don't have traditional unions in careers like trucking. In other words, they've got no Teamsters-style unions, and the longshoremen and construction workers don't have a union either. Which is why when a person gets injured on a construction job, sure, the employer will pay for his hospitalization and stuff, and when he comes back, he'll rehire him. But generally, he won't get sick pay or a cash settlement unless he's lost an eye or a limb. Though if he's a good worker, the boss will hold his place for him. That's about all you can expect. In fact, I've seen that happen on some of my own construction jobs. A guy falls off the roof, gets taken to the hospital, stays home for a couple of weeks. You don't see him again at the job, and suddenly he shows up. Funny thing, he doesn't blame the boss, the working conditions, or the lack of safety gear, which is usually there for the asking, but no one's asking. They don't want to sue anyone. They don't put the blame on others. In fact, most of the time, we'll hear the injured guy saying, "It's in los manos de Dios." It's in the hands of God, like fate or providence. Or maybe it was his own fault. Too much tequila the night before. You know, that's one thing I like and really admire about Latino workers. When something happens, good or bad, they get hurt on the job or they win the lottery, they take personal responsibility or say it's in the hands of God. That instead of blaming someone else and tracking down a lawyer. Now, unfortunately, unions here in Latin America have become a double-edged sword. Sure, they help the plight of the very poorly paid working guy and his working conditions too, but they're training the next generation of Latinos in the ways of lawyers and lawsuits. Luckily, there's a lot of lag time built into that equation. And though you don't see much of that at all on the Gringo Tourist Trail, you're certainly starting to see it in places like Colombia, Costa Rica, and Ecuador. It seems on the tourist trail, for every gringo, there's an equal and opposite scumbag lawyer. Oh, and by the way, occasionally people say, "Johnny, what are the downsides to living way off the gringo tourist trail?" And I tell them, almost none. In fact, that's where your gringo advantage is at an all-time high. If you ask me to pick one downside, I'd have to say, if you don't know Spanish, you're going to fumble around for a long time. But it's also one of the quickest ways to learn Spanish, because if you're not around gringos, the locals won't speak English, so you'll have to, sooner or later, absorb and eventually understand some level of conversational Spanish. That'll happen even if you're as dumb as a box of rocks. So I can pretty much guarantee if you're off the gringo tourist trail for 6 months at a stretch, your Spanish will be good enough to talk to anyone. Though as far as understanding everything the locals say, that's another story, because there are various dialects and city folks speak a little differently from the hayseeds out in the countryside. Then you have different Latin countries that have their own accents and slang words too. Now, as far as welding and busting concrete and other dangerous professions in Latin America, it's only natural that Latino men have busted cement and concrete down to an art, because everything's made out of concrete, stone, and cement here. They don't use traditional wood stud construction, so when you bust a wall or have to do some remodeling, man, the hammers come out, the big ones, and it's a mess. It's really amazing. You might drive by a construction site and see a guy pounding away at a big cement slab, and you drive by at noon, he's still at it all the way till 4 o'clock when it's time to quit. You wonder, how long could a gringo last at that job? Well, I know. If you're a do-it-yourselfer like me, you'll end up busting out concrete here and there too instead of calling someone to do it for you. I'll tell you, 15 minutes is enough. It's too much. Your arms, wrists, and hands are going to hurt. You're going to be covered in dust. And if you're not wearing safety glasses, you're going to get some of that crap in your eyes. And even after a few minutes of hacking away, you're wondering, how do these guys do it day in and day out for 15 or 20 bucks a day? Crazier yet is that they rarely use power tools. It's all done by hand, except on those big road construction crews. Then they'll have jackhammers, but you rarely see them anywhere else. And I'll tell you, there's one thing I noticed right away. As soon as I got down here to Latin America, I had a house and a maintenance guy. When I first shook his hand, it was like shaking hands with a marble statue. Try it sometime. Shake hands with a gardener, maintenance man, or any guy wielding a machete on the street. I'll tell you, it's nothing like shaking the soft, delicate hand of an office weenie gringo. Did I say weenie? I meant office weaned. It's not that Latinos will give you a power grip. They're not competing with you, but you can tell the difference. And some of them have these tiny little hands half the size of yours, though exponentially more powerful. Almost all the construction workers are small, wiry, and don't have an ounce of fat on them. And the overweight and obesity problem you're hearing so much about these days in Latin America and the rest of the world, that's almost exclusively relegated to school kids, which is pretty sad, and the types of Latinos who sit on their dead asses all day. And there's something that expat Eddie just pointed out recently. He's noticed that taxi drivers, bus drivers, and people with their own cars are almost always overweight. In other words, unlike probably 80% of the rest of the population, they don't walk much. Just like most American car owners, they'll get in their vehicle to drive 2 blocks to the store. All right, let's change gears, but not that much. Let's talk about gringos who complain a lot. Yep, there are two kinds of people in this world. Complainers and people who complain about complainers. Yeah, well, when you first get down here, you got those rose-colored glasses on and everything's beautiful. You're in paradise. And after a couple months, you start seeing reality. And that's when some gringos and expats enter their complain-about-everything phase. If you end up staying down here like me, the complain-about-everything phase does fade and you fall into acceptance mode, except when you get together with other gringos. Which brings us to the subject of noise. Always high up on the list of gringo complaints. Now, you know, if you live in a big city in the U.S. and you drive through a Latino neighborhood, the noise level's always jacked up a few notches. No doubt about it. In fact, if you walk or drive through a very quiet Latino neighborhood, could be something's wrong. Maybe someone died. Now, you know, up in the States, if your neighbor's having a loud party after midnight or the dogs are barking too loud next door, you call the cops, make a noise complaint, they come over in 20 minutes and things calm down. It's not a very neighborly thing to do, and you don't make any friends that way, but that's how gringos handle things up in the States. Well, you know, here in Latin America, every weekend, someone's going to be throwing a loud party in your neighborhood, and the dogs will be barking during the week, and the chickens roosting too. And if it annoys you so much, you can call the cops, but guess what? They'll never come over. Not unless you report gunshots or someone's died, and even then, they might not come for a couple hours or the next day. Now, suppose there is a big party in the neighborhood or next door and you don't want to call the cops, that would be rude. You walk over, knock on the door and say, hey, can you hold it down a bit? You know what's going to happen? They're going to hand you a Cuba Libre, a plate of food, and push you out on the dance floor. Because that's the way most Latinos are. They don't get mad, they don't get pissed, they'll invite you in. Especially if you're a gringo. Talk about the gringo advantage. Now, as for me, I like peace and quiet. That's why I like living out in the coffee fields. However, if you live in a regular neighborhood or residential tower, you'll never be able to escape the sound of reggaeton coming from somewhere. And believe me, I can tolerate almost anything, but there are a few things I just cannot stomach. Reggaeton music, and that includes those brain-dead, knuckle-dragging morons perpetrating that garbage. And I can't stomach rap or hip-hop and the mental midgets and Neanderthals in that business either. Oh, and I can't stand the sight of the Obamas, the Bushes, the Clintons, Trump, Maxine Waters, does she need a brain transplant or what? Man, do I complain a lot, huh? But that's just what we're talking about. Gringo and expat complainers. But seriously, as for me, there are very few things I really dislike about Latin America except reggaeton. And those scumbag, lard-ass thieving politicians, well, like a ripe garbage dump or an overfilled septic tank, politicians are everywhere and you just can't avoid them. Anyway, so down here you've got the sounds of that awful reggaeton coming at you from everywhere. TV, radio, gas stations, bars, clubs, blasting from iPhones, car repair shops, supermarkets, in taxis and Ubers too. But at least then, because you're paying for the ride, you can tell the guy to knock it off if you want to preserve a few brain cells. Oh, and this is kind of revealing. When you talk to a Latino that's over 40, almost every one of them will tell you they don't like reggaeton either. They like the classic Latin music. Samba, salsa music, even Latin rock. Kind of like how the over 40 crowd in the U.S. feels about rap, hip-hop, and popular music on the radio up there, too. I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with me. I like to hear songs that have an actual beginning, middle, and an end. Played and sung by people, not computers, who have actual talent. Is that too much to ask? I guess so. Speaking of reggaeton music, about that Latin noise problem. Every Latin country, state, municipality, and city have noise regulations, and some have curfews too, but they're almost never enforced except when it comes to bars and discos. If, for example, bar time is 1 or 2 or 4, whatever, you can be sure on weekends, especially when a lot of people are out, the cops will be around ready to slap a hefty fine on a bar owner who serves one drink after bar time. If you talk to bar owners, and I have, in fact, I used to own part of a bar in Antigua, Guatemala, they'll tell you it's pressure from the local residents because bars and discos and such are usually located in high-end areas, high-rent areas, mostly in mixed business, commercial, and residential areas. So residents there usually have dough, especially in tourist areas, gringo and otherwise, and thus have friends in high places and can get those laws enforced. And as for bars and discos that are not in high-rent areas or are off the tourist trail, the cops will still monitor a lot of those places at bar time, not because the residents complained. It wouldn't matter because they're not connected, but because it's a nice source of extortion or mordida money. They'll, for example, on occasion, walk in at bar time, check people's IDs, and if they catch one person who doesn't have an ID or who is under 18, that's the general drinking age throughout Latin America, they'll threaten to close the bar down for a few days till the owner makes a court appearance, or they'll give him the choice to pay the fine right now. And of course, that's an easy 50 or 100 bucks for the cops, and that's illegal. Oh, and here's a tip. You know, lots of gringos and expats, especially on the gringo tourist trail when they're going to bars, discos, and clubs, they get extorted by the cops. And it's not about you doing anything illegal or being in the bar after hours, none of that. What they'll do is they'll do an ID check, and if you don't have your ID on you, they'll tell you it's the law. In fact, you've heard me say this before. If you go to the U.S. State Department website, it says always leave your original documents in your hotel safe or whatever. Don't bring them out with you unless you absolutely need them, like to drive, for example. You'll need your driver's license. And, of course, you'll need your passport if you're at the airport or crossing borders or changing money at a bank. So anyway, the police will shake down gringos and expats if they're not carrying an ID, though it's illegal for them to do that. But who's going to argue, especially at 2 in the morning in a bar? Oh, and of course, this will almost always happen on the gringo tourist trail, because off the trail, well, there's not enough gringos around for them to pull a stunt like that. Not to mention, when you're off the gringo tourist trail, very few cops can speak enough English to try to extort money from you. So my advice, yes, leave all your original documents in your hotel safe. And carry just a nice high-definition color copy of your passport and or driver's license or both. Then you're covered 100%. It doesn't even have to be certified or notarized. So then how do I know that'll work when confronted by the cops trying to pull that stunt? Well, it's happened to me a number of times. So then what do you do if you don't have an ID on you? Well, you know you're in the right. And if you're a stubborn kind of gringo, you can always call their bluff and say, okay, take me down to the station. I know my rights. Or you could say, take me to my hotel and I'll get my documents out of the safe. Either way, you'll more than likely stonewall them, because taking you to your hotel or to the station is the last thing they want to do. They just want 50 or 100 bucks. Now, I don't want you to think that this is a common occurrence. I've been in Latin America over 27 years now, and it's only happened to me maybe 4 times. So what, that's once every 7 years? Oh, and every time it happened, I was in a tourist area. That should tell you a lot. I found out that if a gringo or expat's at a bar or a disco off the gringo tourist trail and it's bar time and the cops walk in and check for IDs, they'll skip the gringo completely and go around to the rest of the Latin people and check theirs. That's part of the gringo advantage. You have to see to believe. They treat you with more respect than they do their own citizens when you're off the gringo tourist trail. Even so, we all get a little bit uptight and nervous when cops walk into a place and start shaking down people. But I can tell you in my 27 plus years here in Latin America, that's never happened to me off the gringo tourist trail. Speaking of carrying passports and ID documents, you know, I always recommend a passport pouch. I have a really cool one. Actually, I have 2. They're damn cheap, only around 13 bucks. They're RFID protected, so they can't be scanned. And they're absolutely perfect for traveling in comfort and still having all your documents on you when necessary. But here's what I've found, especially if you're traveling the lowlands and in hot tropical climates, especially when you're standing in line for an hour or so at a hot, sweaty border where people are leaning and breathing on you, you know, that personal space thing. Since that little hidden passport pouch is up against your body, it's going to get moist and sweaty. those things aren't impermeable. They're made to breathe. So air can go in and out of them and keep the stuff fresh. But also that means moisture will get in there too. Your own sweaty body moisture and natural humidity. And if you've got your passport in there, which is made out of paper, it's going to absorb some of that and get, well, munged up, as will other documents like bus and airplane tickets, anything made out of paper. But I do have a fix, a hack, and it works really well. A day or so before you leave, stop at an office supply store and buy one of those thin, clear plastic cover protectors that people use for college reports. It'll set you back like 50 cents. What you do then is cut two pieces just slightly bigger than the size of your passport, take some transparent packing tape, and make yourself a little passport holder. Slip your passport and other valuable paper stuff you're going to carry in your passport pouch into that thing. And now you've got a plastic impermeable protector so that your own sweat and tropical oozings won't penetrate into the paper. Tropical oozings. That paints a picture, huh? Oh, and for you guys and gals coming to my Expat Insider Seminar this July, I'll show you mine and how I made it. No, not the tropical oozings, the passport protector. Now, before I came up with that little hack, I'd always carry a paper copy of my passport and ID documents folded up in my passport pouch. But after about 3 months of constantly wearing the thing, they start becoming fragile and decomposed with the humidity, especially at the seams where they were folded. Now, my paper ID copies last years in that thing. By the way, if you want to know exactly which passport pouch I use, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Oh, and a lot of times when I'm hanging around the beach or traveling in real hot areas, I'll stick my paper money in that thing too. There's plenty of room. Because, you know, there's nothing worse than pulling out a wad of wilted cash. You know what I mean? Yuck. Of course, none of that'll happen to you if you're living or hanging around in the Altiplano because it's perfect spring weather all year round. It's cool, there's low humidity, and you just won't sweat. What I'm talking about is when you're hanging around at the beach or in a big, hot, sweaty city. Anyway, I'll be showing all my seminar attendees that particular setup and many, many more things, too. Oh, and if you're thinking about signing up for my July seminar, check out the info and sign-up page by going to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. The early bird discounts are in full force right now, so do check it out. And as for you past attendees who want to be repeat offenders, we always have those. Remember, you get an automatic $1,000 discount. By the way, if you're wondering if my week-long seminar is worth it, all you have to do is ask yourself, why does Johnny have so many repeat offenders? In fact, I've had some people as repeaters 3 different times. If that's not the best endorsement you've ever heard, I don't know what is.
You've been listening to the Expat Files Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos!